This is the Oanda Podcast, brought to you by Jazz FM's Business Breakfast.
You're listening to the Oanda Market Insights Podcast with me, Johnny Hart. Each week, we preview and review the big business and market stories with an Oanda senior market analyst. And this week, he's back. It's Craig Earlham. And a very good morning to you, Craig. How are you doing?
I'm very good, mate.
You've been away, actually, haven't you? So
I wouldn't go that far.
Well, you've taken a few days off and plenty has been going on. Let's start with the shock departure of the British Chancellor of the Exchequer, Sajid Javid, who's going to go down in history as one of the few chancellors who never actually delivered a budget. I mean, do you have sympathy for the fellow?
Yeah, not the record he probably wanted in all of this. Do I have sympathy for him? I mean, it's difficult, really. I mean, we do just live in ridiculous times, so ridiculous things happen. And we've been talking about it, not just in the UK, but just around the world. It seems to be every other week something ridiculous happens that we've never seen before or that rarely happens. And this just seems to be the latest example of that. What was it he said? No self-respecting person would take on the role at this moment in time. I mean, you've got to wonder exactly what the conditions are that he was expected to work under.
Well, sack all his staff, for one.
Yeah, I mean, that's just one. Then you have to wonder about the fiscal the restraints as well, in terms of, obviously, the Conservatives have their own fiscal rules. Everyone expected that this was going to be a budget which really tested the boundaries of that. But you wonder whether this actually ignores the boundaries. They suggest that they're now going to ignore the boundaries altogether as far as their normal fiscal rules are concerned. And you can see from the market reaction as well to this to his resignation. That's exactly what's expected. The pound jumped higher. The FTSE obviously retreated more because it has that inverse relationship with the pound, because I think it's around at this point close to 80% of its revenue is generated from abroad. So obviously when things are converted back, it does tend to have that negative, that inverse impact. But obviously bond yields jumped a little bit higher, so that suggests that the markets are now pricing in more borrowing. So yeah, it does seem that markets are now expecting a more expansionary budget on the back of all of this, and we'll see how popular that is. Boris Johnson, I think it's safe to say, is not your stereotypical Conservative Prime Minister. We've seen plenty of examples of that already, so an interesting few months lie ahead.
And he's enjoying a honeymoon period at the moment, and as you said, the pound rising to its highest level since the election after the news of Rishi Sunak's appointment. Is it because, as you said, they think all the taps are going to be turned on? I mean, how far could they go in terms of spending? I mean, the constraints that obviously Mr. Javid wanted to keep to a certain extent, it's everything's let loose now, isn't it?
Well, it seems to be. Again, we'll see from the numbers, and we can then judge it just in terms of where they're looking to push the boundaries, and also maybe how they're looking to do the accounting for it, for example. But Boris Johnson, like I say, shown that he's not afraid to spend the cash. We've seen the approval of HS2, for example, or the support for HS2, which was an extremely controversial and expensive project. We've obviously seen his approach with Huawei, taking a stance which doesn't appease everyone. I mean, nothing was going to appease everyone, but maybe didn't appease the people that you would have expected him to want to appease. So he's already made some very controversial decisions, and it looks like this latest one is the latest in what could become a long list of controversial announcements. Like I say, the devil will be in the detail, but all the signs are now pointing to a very expansionary budget.
And it's very much about Boris Johnson and his inner circle. Or when I say inner circle, I probably mean Dominic Cummings.
It's a small circle.
Yes, keeping control of those economic levers going forward. I mean, Sajid Javid, we thought, was Boris's man. But obviously we were wrong. What do we know about Rishi Sunak?
To be honest, very little. I think he worked in the Treasury, so Boris assured us that a lot of the work for the budget had already been done, and he had been right at the forefront of this, so there should be a lot of continuity on that.
Former Goldman Sachs guy as well?
Yeah. I mean, I think the message which many people may take from this is he's probably a bit of a yes man. Yeah. And I think that can be a concern. You want differing opinions within the cabinet. You want people to debate and come to conclusions. When you're surrounding people with yes men, you wonder whether, yes, it does get things done. As we've seen in the US, for example, Donald Trump has surrounded himself with yes people. And as soon as they have disagreed, then they've
been on their way.
Been on their way and replaced with someone who else who will say yes. So we've seen that it's affecting.
Doesn't it put him in a strong position now, as in the new Chancellor, because he can't fire anybody else soon, could he? I mean, even if he doesn't go according. Yeah, you're giving me that look as Boris will do what he wants.
Yeah, but the normal rules don't apply.
They don't apply, but he'd have to give him a chance. I mean, obviously, Philip Hammond had a checkered past, didn't he, with Theresa May. They famously didn't get on very well. Those sort of halcyon days, shall we call them, of the Cameron-Osborne duality, they're well and truly in the past.
They are. This is very much one man has his...
levers on the power.
Yeah, exactly. And he wants things to go a certain way. And if you want to work in his cabinet, you have to do as you're told, effectively. Mm. So that is how this is going to go. I don't think there's going to be any more disruption on that side, because I think he's taken the job on the premise that he's going to abide by the rules which have been set out in front of him, and who has chosen those rules, whether it is Boris or whether it is Dominic Cummings. It's almost irrelevant at this point. It is what it is. This is where we stand, and this is how the decisions are being made. Like I say, what it means is that we are going to see probably some very effective and efficient work coming from the government, because you are surrounded with the yes people. It does mean that you are likely to get things done, because there's going to be far less objection. But it means that the judgment is going to come later on in terms of how correct it was, because obviously debate generally is good, even if it does slow things down a little.
Okay, let's move on to another subject. And much of the last few weeks has been dominated in all the pages, front pages and business ones, by the coronavirus and the growing threat to the global economy. I see Nissan shares, Craig, have fallen to their lowest in a decade. Is that directly because of the coronavirus? Because I know they've been having to shut factories in Japan, because obviously this is affecting the delivery of parts all over the world, particularly from China.
Yeah, I mean, people always think about Chinese manufacturing when you're thinking about what areas where this could be impacted, Chinese luxury goods stores, etc. And these are the areas that have been very strongly publicised, and also things like the airliners, the hotel groups have all been impacted because of the impact that it has on tourism. But then there is the other side of it as well, which is China is part of a massive manufacturing supply chain. So when you're looking at industries that rely on just-in-time manufacturing, and the car manufacturing service is one of these industries where basically the parts arrive just in time to be built into the car, which is then just in time to be shipped off. It is an extremely efficient process. So when one of those things start to fall foul, then you do have issues. We've learned a lot about the car manufacturing industry, actually, over the last few years here because of Brexit, because this is one of the industries which has been repeatedly highlighted as one that could really face a lot of difficulty should the borders become a little bit more tied up, or in the event of a no-deal Brexit, if it became more and more difficult for these car manufacturers to get hold of the equipment that they needed efficiently. So this is a story which we're all too familiar with. But this is just another knock-on effect from the coronavirus, is that it has caused bottlenecking effectively in the supply chain, and it has caused issues, and especially when you're looking at that particular province as well, that is a massive cog in the global car manufacturing machine as well. So it's a big problem, but it's one of many major problems that we have right now as a result of the coronavirus. And obviously that's when you're just talking about the economy and the markets and things like that. That's not even when you're talking about the bit most important thing here, which is people's lives, which have
people's jobs.
Yeah. Obviously the number of people infected has risen by thousands. The number of people that have died is well over 1,000 at this point. That's obviously the most important thing. Yeah. But the disruption does spill over into many other areas.
Okay, let's stay with China and Huawei, and some interesting news regarding US prosecutors who've alleged that Huawei is a criminal enterprise, accusing the company of stealing technology from a host of US companies, violating sanctions and making false statements to the FBI. This really is a war going on in America between the Americans and the Chinese, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, this seemed to be starting off as as part of the trade deal. Effectively, people thought that Huawei was a pawn in all of this, and it would all be resolved as part of a deal. And what we're still seeing now is it's greater than that. We've obviously seen the US putting enormous pressure on the UK to try and dissuade the UK from using Huawei as part of its 5G build-out. And it's worked to an extent in terms of the more secure areas of the network, but then it's not worked entirely because Boris has effectively left the door open to using them in a certain percentage, up to a certain percentage of the less security specific areas. So it seems that the US does have a major problem with Huawei. Obviously, you have to look at the motive and say, what is the motive here? Why is it they've got such an issue with Huawei? Is it purely a security issue? Is the reason purely because they are concerned that the Chinese regime effectively could create a backdoor entry via Huawei because of the laws over there? Or is it because Huawei is ultimately just further ahead than the US counterparts, that they are able to create the technology, to run the technology more efficiently, cheaper, and better than companies in the US and Europe, and therefore by making life difficult for them, by holding them up effectively, you're giving your own companies a chance to play catch up. It's really difficult to say, but I think one thing that we have learned over the last 3 years from Donald Trump is, just because he's taking this approach, it doesn't mean that this is the problem that he necessarily has. He's imposed steel tariffs on grounds of national security. He takes a problem which he has, or he takes a problem which he wants to create, and then he finds a way to do it. The two things don't really have to match up. So just because this is what he's going after Huawei with at this moment in time, it doesn't mean that that is the actual motive for taking that action, if that makes sense.
Before we talk about next week, a quick word about the latest figures on Eurozone GDP growth. It slowed to 0.1% quarter on quarter in the last 3 months of 2019, and very much dragged down by the economies of France and Italy.
Yeah, that's the type of growth that the UK can only aspire to, right? We got 0% growth, I think, in the final quarter. Although there are
It was better the previous quarter. Let's be fair.
There are extenuating circumstances, obviously, with the election and Brexit.
It should be much better this quarter, of course, in the UK.
You would think so. But
the coronavirus
it does have an impact. It does take its toll. It's taking its toll everywhere, obviously, to a lesser degree in many cases. But with the euro, it is a massive problem. And again, this is what the coronavirus is going to have an impact. Obviously, there are close trade ties between the likes of Germany, Italy, China, and others as well. The EU is a big trade partner for China and vice versa. So there is going to be an element there. But there are broader issues, obviously, in Europe. We have started to see some of the surveys bounce back, which is encouraging for the rest of this year. But that GDP data for the fourth quarter does just signify just how difficult they are finding things at the moment. But then again, look at global trade at the minute. Look at the direction of travel it's been heading in. A lot of countries within Europe rely on trade, and Germany is very much one of them. And we have seen, obviously, Italy in recession. Germany came close to recession. It's no surprise that we've seen it squeeze out just a teeny tiny bit of growth. But hopefully, like I say, the surveys are improving. We've seen that latest stimulus effort from the ECB. I'm not sure that's going to have that great an impact, but efforts are being made, and I do think we are going to see a bit of a bounce back this year.
Although a lot of these negative figures do suggest, and let's take in the coronavirus as well within this, that economies are suffering. We don't know the effect of the coronavirus. It could be that we might even see a cut in base rates in the UK. I'm right, aren't I, that there's not going to be a change in rates this year, is there, unless it's going downwards?
Yeah, we'll see where we stand right at the end of this year, but the coronavirus has thrown up very much another spanner in the works right now. So the conversation has switched again from potentially raising interest rates to the next move will be nothing or a cut. I wouldn't be surprised if this year we don't see any moves from any of the major central banks, if I'm honest. I do think we are going to see a bounce back in the UK economy. The US economy is strong. I think the euro area economy will bounce back a little bit as well. So I think it could be a kind of slow and steady year as far as the central banks are concerned. But yeah, the coronavirus certainly does tilt the bias more towards cutting than hiking at this moment in time.
Okay, let's look ahead to next week, Craig. What should we look after?
So next week, it's a bit of a quiet one, if I'm honest. We do have some more earnings results. I think we've got some of like the kind of energy companies reporting. I think HSBC and a few others reporting as well. So obviously, those are good. But then I think earnings season generally just has come more a bit to the background. It's hard to see past the coronavirus and the impact that that's having, and the impact it's having on sentiment as because of the numbers that we've seen. Obviously, this week, we haven't mentioned the fact that we saw obviously the revision to the way the data is collected. And they kind of, if people are clinically diagnosed, then they are now included in the numbers, which is why we showed a sharp spike on Wednesday. This is still a major driver for the markets because of how much worse it is than people initially anticipated, and because of the fact that we are looking for signs of deceleration in the numbers, but we haven't got any real evidence that that's actually happening yet. That is still going to be a massive driver. Then towards the back end of next week, we've got some like PMI readings, which again have improved recently for the UK and the euro area. And for that reason, I think people are going to be paying close attention to them. And then we've got things like ECB minutes, Fed minutes as well, which could also be interesting. But broadly speaking, I've got to be honest, it's going to be a bit of a quieter week. But again, even in weeks that have been busier, coronavirus has really just overshadowed everything. So I don't really expect that to change.
Okay, Craig Ellen, thank you very much indeed. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Was the OANDA podcast from the team behind Jazz FM's Business Breakfast, a daily early morning 30-minute briefing for the day ahead. On air from 6 a.m. Listen to Jazz FM on DAB, online, or just ask Alexa.